Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Go Boys. Coming up on the show, Jason Weingarten, professional sports bettor, will join us as we will turn the page to baseball. We'll talk some awards, futures, get his thoughts, see if he's bet any football. I know he's bet a couple of ladies' golf tournaments. I think last week, and he was talking about this on, I think, on another show, where he had 20-1, and his girl had a 5-shot lead going into the final round and lost in a playoff, and he had another one a couple weeks ago that was just as bad. So we'll see what's up with Jason. See what he's betting. He is always interesting and fun to talk to. He's always got interesting ideas on how to bet all of this stuff. So we'll talk to him coming up, and turn the page to baseball, and turn the page because the basketball season is over. It ended Monday night. Edmonton and Florida are playing right now, so we'll see if we can get the NHL season going. If that series keeps going, maybe I'll do a spot on, you know, game 6 or a game 7. Definitely spend some time on it, but if that series ends tonight, that'll pretty much be that. The NBA season ended in, I think, fitting fashion with just how badly these playoffs disappointed us. You went in with hopes of, hey, this is going to be an exciting postseason, pretty well-balanced field. Even the teams like, you know, the Heat is an 8 seed. Hey, they're dangerous. Well, they lose Butler and they're not so dangerous. The Pelicans is an 8 seed. Well, they lose Zion, they're not as dangerous. And the injuries, they started and they didn't stop, whether it was superstars, Giannis, Butler, Zion, just the complimentary guys, like all the Knicks guys getting hurt. It was just, it was a really disappointing playoffs. The Knicks Sixers gave us some moments, but other than that, you know, Knicks Pacers were fun at times. Some of those Knicks games were fun. Denver Minnesota was a fun series, even though the games weren't any good. And I think back to that game 7, doing the podcast after that Sunday night, Denver Minnesota. And that was over a month ago now. That was the last time we got a game 7 or even a game 6 in this playoffs. I mean, think about it that way. Denver Minnesota a month ago, we haven't gotten a game 6 since. So we went through a conference finals where we didn't get a game 6 or a game 7. One of them was a sweep. And then we get to an NBA finals where we didn't get a game 6. A game 6. 5 and 6 is that line between long series and short series. Anything 5 or less is a very short series. 6 or longer, you're talking long series where, hey, at least if it's game 6, we're one game away from a game 7. It's 3-2. It feels close. But we didn't get that. Conference finals, just kind of a dud. And I think Denver getting eliminated really threw this postseason off track, where Denver-Boston would have been a fun final. Maybe Murray was hurt and that never would have been the case. But Dallas-Minnesota just never felt like a conference final. And I felt like once Denver, and I think I said this on this podcast, once Denver lost to Minnesota, it felt like Boston won the championship that night, and that proved to be true. I can't get to this idea. I know they're 81-20. I know they buried all these teams, so maybe I'm wrong. It's a very good starting five. I can't get to this idea that I've heard where Boston's with this all-time great team, and you put them on the short list. I can't get there. I mean, forget the Jordan Bulls, the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, just teams in my lifetime. The Warriors had teams from 2015 to 19 that I thought were all better. The LeBron Heat. I mean, this was a really good Celtics team. And maybe I'm guilty. Maybe a lot of people, I think, are guilty of underestimating them because they didn't have that one super-duper star. And that was an interesting finals MVP vote where I thought Tatum was going to get it. The market certainly thought Tatum was going to get it. Tatum was like minus 500 in the second half. Brown ends up winning. I still think Holiday had a case. I knew he wasn't going to win it. The ties never go to the French players. But Holiday really had an impact on the series, I think, equal to Brown and Tatum. But back to my original point, though, the Celtics don't have like a top three player. They probably don't even have a top five player. I think Tatum's somewhere in that 6, 7, 8 range. He was good in the series. He wasn't great. So that's probably why we don't look at the Celtics as being this dominant team where, hey, you don't have the best player. And those Shaq Kobe teams, I mean, they might have had the two best players in the league, those early 2000s. The Celtics don't have that, but they have a good starting five where they basically have all-stars all around or fringe all-stars with Porzingis and Holiday. I don't think either has made an all-star team, but both are all-star worthy players. And then you have Tatum and Brown who are very good. So congrats to the Celtics. This was really set up back in the trade with the Celtics and the Nets back, was it 2012, where the Celtics traded Garnett, traded Pierce all at the end of their career and got just an unprecedented asset haul in terms of what the Nets gave up, unprotecting the picks. This was 2013. I mean, just complete irresponsibility by Bobby Marks and the Nets front office to give them pick after pick after pick, all unprotected. The Nets guys got old, and then they set up what is a great run here for the Celtics, where a lot of this has been done with stuff that's not theirs. The Brown pick wasn't theirs. The Tatum pick wasn't theirs. They made the smart move to trade with the Fultz deal with Philly, and the Nets pretty much served this on a platter. And we had the turn where it looked like the Nets were going to survive that because they got Durant and they had Irving and they eventually got Harden and they buried the Boston, the Celtics in that playoff series a few years ago. And it looked like they were going to overcome that trade. But that trade is has rose to the surface again when you look at just how the Nets, a team in the Celtics division, just handed them, you can't call it a dynasty, but a run that's going to be, I mean, started in 2017 when they made the conference finals, and they're going to, they're not, I don't know. I mean, look, the idea you're going to win multiple championships, that's hard to predict, but they're going to at least be in the mix for the next 4 or 5 years. So that's a 10, 12 year run here of either winning championships or being in the mix that is all served up on a platter by the Nets, thinking Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett had something left, which they obviously didn't. So good job by Danny Ainge. Good job by Stevens, Brad Stevens, to build this team. Good moves. And they are the plus 290 favorite next year. Denver's 8-1. OKC's plus 850. Timberwolves are 9-1. Bucks are plus 950. Mavericks are 10-1. Knicks are 16-1. I don't know about that, unless they think they're getting somebody really good. The Knicks are not a title team. Lakers and Warriors are 30-1. None of these numbers look great. If I had to bet anything, honestly, Denver at 8-1 looks pretty good, just because they do still have the best player. You figure, all right, they're a little fat and happy this year. They'll come back hungry. Bad loss in the playoffs. They're going to be in the mix. That's one of those. It's almost like betting the Chiefs, where, you know, you bet the Nuggets now at 8-1, and you look up next early May, middle of May, and you're happy you have the 8-1. They'll probably be in the second, third round of the playoffs, and you go from there. So if I had to bet one, I'd bet the Nuggets at 8-1. Thunder at plus 850 are interesting, just because they have so much stuff to trade. They have a million picks. I don't know who that superstar is that they finally cash those picks in for. But that they certainly have the ability to do that. And look, they were the one seed this year, and you figure they'll continue to get better. So that's a team to keep an eye on. But if I had to bet anyone, Nuggets at 8-1. Celtics are just too short at plus 290. But you look around the East, unless you believe in Giannis and Dame, which I don't believe in Doc Rivers. Unless you believe in the Sixers, how could you? Unless you believe in the Knicks, unless you think there's some big move coming. And there's usually a big move coming in the NBA. It's just the way the NBA works now. Celtics are probably going to be in the mix to go back to a finals or come pretty close. Now, you would have thought this last year about Denver, things come up, things change, injuries happen. It's hard to go back to back, but the Celtics don't have a ton of competition in the East. So we'll keep our eye on the NBA. We'll see if we get any big moves. Yeah, maybe Paul George changes teams. I think that's possible, if not likely. Does that move the needle? Maybe, depending on where he goes. I guess if he goes to Philly, we have George, Embiid, and Maxey. I'm going to need to see Embiid stay healthy for playoff stretch before I believe in them. I don't know that anything earth-shattering is happening, but it's the NBA, and the unexpected does seem to happen. And the offseason sometimes is better than – it's always better than the regular season now. Sometimes it's better than the playoffs, so we'll see if we get a fun offseason. July 1st is usually when these trades start to happen, offseason stuff, and maybe the night of the draft, which I think is it June 26th, June 27th. It's not a great draft, but maybe that's when – these teams start to move and we start to see some player movement there. And it'll be an interesting draft, just because, and we talked about this with Ben Wilson a week or so ago, there's just not a lot of good players. Who knows how many teams value these picks and how they value these picks and players. So you might see some movement there. The Hawks have the first pick. They're not a win now team, but they're not a rebuilding team. So it leaves for a lot of uncertainty. So betting the draft will be interesting. And then maybe we get an interesting off season here with some of these players that could be on the move. Jimmy Butler, Paul George, I guess Durant staying put. I don't know that, you know, LeBron's changing teams. So we'll keep an eye on that. But we'll start to turn our attention to baseball as we are done with basketball. Football's not that far away, like 6 weeks of the Hall of Fame game, but we'll do a lot of baseball today and going forward. That is next. Jason Weingarten. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast, and he is back. Jason Weingarten, talk a little baseball. Jason, what's going on, man? It's been a while. I'm trying to think last time we had you on. I think it was right around the start of the season. What's going on, and what have you been betting? How has your baseball been betting going so far this season?
Baseball's been pretty good. The sides and totals markets have been fine. Really, you can't complain. The first innings, surprisingly, when I do play them, they have not been great. And because of that, I've been playing them less and less. And fortunately, I managed to avoid some of the days where they were just skewed to the no runs. But yeah, I've been focusing on sides and totals and haven't had to worry too much about prop variance. So yeah, can't complain too much about baseball.
if with first inning, you're for people that don't know, you like to bet, yes, there will be a run in the first inning, right? You find that over the years, that's been the way to attack those markets.
It has been. Unfortunately, the last year or two, it's kind of dried up, and I keep thinking, well, it's going to come back. It's going to come back, but it does not look like it's coming back anytime soon.
Before we get to some of these awards, what are some of your general takeaways? Teams you've been liking to back, teams you've been like fading, just big picture thoughts here in terms of baseball.
Well, I feel like we're kind of into the second full year of this new schedule with the playing everybody and not playing your division over and over again, and the pitch clock, and what's the other thing? There's the one other big change.
You can only throw over a couple of times, which helps the base runners.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there's been all these changes, and it actually kind of like, at first I was a little apprehensive about it, but I do enjoy the faster paced baseball games. I don't enjoy the third wild card. If you look at the standings right now in the National League, every team except Colorado and Miami are within two games of the third wild card spot. You know, we're talking the Cubs, the Reds, the Mets are one game back. The Nationals are actually tied for the final playoff spot right now. So I kind of feel like this devalues the regular season, and especially it's going to kind of hurt at the trade deadline. If you're only 1.5 games out of the third wild card spot, are you really going to be able to justify to ownership spending money to acquire more talent, to win two or three games when that's the difference? I don't think you're going to get as many mid-market owners to spend more money. And I just feel like it's devaluing the regular season to the point where it's kind of boring some days. Like, I don't know what to say about a pennant race. Or not, excuse me, not a pennant race, a playoff race where every team is alive in the National League except two. It sounds good, but it's really not that good when you look at some of these teams' records and they're only two games back and five games under 500.
Yep, I agree with that. It used to be, I mean, to just put it simply, it used to be you had to be good to make the playoffs in baseball, and it's becoming like NFL where everyone's around 8-8 and everyone has a chance to get in. And it works in the NFL because there's not that many games. It's only 16 games and it's a small sample and it's week to week. It's different. The trade-off with baseball is like, all right, it's 162 games. It's long, but it matters. It weeds out a lot of the teams where you have to be really good to make it. And the regular season is almost like a playoff. Now it's just, it's less and less meaningful.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, like my position is unfortunately an untenable one that'll never be returned to, but I think you should just have East and West and the winners of each play in the championship series. And there is no wild card, and that makes all the regular season games playoff games, but we're never going back to that, unfortunately. So not going to win that argument.
Nope. It was better. And then, like, I would even meet him halfway in between where I have the same thought process as you, but when you had the two wild cards, one of them, they would have to play right away. That little playoff, that one game playoff, I thought was good where it didn't let that many teams in. It still incentivized winning the division, because if you didn't win the division, you got a wild card. Well, you were punished by the fact that you had to play a single elimination game, and it was those two wild card games were fun. You'd start the playoffs with pretty much a game seven. I thought that was a good compromise where really you're still getting four teams in the playoffs and you got punished pretty much for winning the wild card. I thought that was fine with
those wild card games tended to actually be pretty good games, yes, too. So I do wish we went back to a simpler time.
Yep. And now we're looking at Baltimore and Yankees, where the loser of that division is going to win 100 games. They're going to be stuck with a best 2 out of 3 against some crappy wild card team. And hey, anything can happen. So I don't know. It's not great. Speaking of races, that might be the only race we're looking at. A lot of these just division races, it's Yankees Orioles. That could be a good race down to the finish. But other than that, a lot of these teams have opened up some space. Are there any of these other divisions besides the East where you think somebody that's not in first place can make a run and is worth a bet in terms of the divisions?
You know, I think the Astros get above 500. I don't know if they're going to be able to close the gap on the Mariners the way the Mariners are pitching. They might have enough of a lead to take this division. I want to say the Royals or the Twins could make a run. I feel like we talk about that every year, that the Central Division is up, up for grabs later in the season. But I do like the Guardians there. And then the Braves, they're 39 and 31. They're not necessarily a bad team. They've been an unlucky team. They've been an injured team. Strider, Harris, Acuna, any team's going to lose those three guys going to hurt, but they're still, like I said, 39 and 31. Could they make a run? Maybe. But otherwise, yeah, it's what I was kind of saying is the expanded wild card has de-incentivized competitiveness, and you see it in these large leads breaking out early, and the good teams and the average to bad teams are separated more and more.
Do you think they're messing with the baseballs? A lot of teams, I mean, it's just hard to hit. It's just, I think the Padres have the best team batting average at like 262. The average hitter's hitting like 239. Do you find that it's just pitching is really good, or they're doing something with the balls, or probably a mix of the two things?
I don't think baseball is capable of, messing with the balls at the production level. Because, I mean, that requires going to factories in Costa Rica and telling the workers to change how they're doing things. I've myself thought of different ways, theories that how the balls can be changing in production. And, because it's obviously not a conspiracy originating from the commissioner's office. So as far as I could conclude, the best ideas I've come up with is that we're seeing teams, like individual on the team level, we're seeing them have a better understanding of humidifiers and how using the humidifier works to change out balls advantageously. We've also seen teams change their ballparks to benefit their clubs. For example, Baltimore moved their fences and raised the fences, a year or two ago, and it's helped their pitchers a lot. So I think a lot of times, we're probably looking at different things. And the other theory I have just comes down to like the production quality of stuff. Like, there's just not as good as quality control. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's really sort of like an organized conspiracy to change the balls. It just doesn't make sense to me.
But we have noticed, like with the first innings is an example where a lot of no runs, first inning gets home, just the scoring is down. Have you noticed that it's just there's less offense, there's fewer homers, and it's just more pitching friendly? Is that something you'd agree with?
Well, so here's the thing. I don't love to watch the first innings, because when you watch the first innings, you see like a guy, dive and cut off a ball that should be a hit, and it becomes a no score when it should be a score, and you're like, damn, that, I don't want stuff like that to affect my thinking. So a lot of times I don't really watch the first inning. I look at the box score, because it just says, line drive to center field out. It doesn't say, oh my God, did you see that? That had like a 3% catch rate or whatever. It should have been a hit 97% of the time. So I don't know. I think there could be a million things why, but no, I don't really have a good reason for why any of this stuff is happening. Your guess is as good as mine.
All right. Awards. We'll start with MVP. Judge is the favorite in the American League. He's now minus money. The National League took a turn a couple days ago. Betts gets hit on the hand, the wrist, with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, so he's out. Looks like a couple of months. Ohtani, his teammate, is now the short shot. Any bet you would make right now for MVP in either league?
I think it's crazy. You told me a couple weeks ago, you were like, Judge is coming, because what was he, like 10-1 or 12-1 at that point?
16-1, and he was only like two homers 16 behind the lead. Yeah, it was crazy, I thought.
And I basically blew it off. I was like, no way. It's all Juan Soto. Juan Soto's the best player or whatever. So once again, I'm just totally wrong about Aaron Judge. Minus 110. And I still think that's crazy, because to me, I've said this before, but like, what's the difference between the Yankees this year and last year? It's Juan Soto. Like, Aaron Judge is great. We love Aaron Judge. He's amazing. He hits home runs. He's He's a real Yankee. He's going to be a Yankee his whole career. Juan Soto is the dude that changed the attitude of this team. Am I wrong? Like, am I wrong that Juan Soto is the difference this year?
No, but I would say when you're comparing the two, it's like Judge was already there. It's almost like you're cloning Judge. So now you have two of Judges with the same production. That's why they went from being mediocre to one of the best teams in baseball. And the fact Judge missed a lot of time last year, but now it's the fact that you have two of Judge basically, where it was only Judge by himself last year. I think that's a big difference, but you're right. Soto's the huge difference maker here. Absolutely.
Yeah. I still tend to think I put Soto ahead of Judge. If I have a ballot, you get the next sort of tier guys, Henderson and Bobby Witt. I just don't know. Like, I know Henderson is breaking out in his second year. So rare to see a second year player win the MVP, even with the numbers he's putting up. I have a hard time seeing him, beat Judge and Soto. Even if they win the division, I don't think that's going to be enough to flip the MVP. It's possible, but I would be inclined to say it's still Soto and Judge. One and two. I don't necessarily agree that it's Judge minus 110, but the market's saying Judge is the favorite, and I don't really disagree with it there. And then, farther down the list, it's like you really want to make a case for Jose Ramirez or whatever, but Jose Ramirez just isn't winning the MVP over Aaron Judge. It's not happening.
Totally agree. How about National League?
Yeah, I mean, this race sort of just got a little bit more interesting, right, with Mookie Betts and then Acuna. Acuna never really was in it, but he's now completely out of it. And Mookie Betts, I guess, what are we saying he's completely out of it 2 months, not going to win, right?
Probably. I mean, I would need more than 20-1 that they're offering. If a guy's going to miss 2 months, I can't bet him at 20-1.
Yeah, I see 50
my
at
mind,
FanDuel,
though.
But I'm still not going to bet him at
Yeah.
50. Otani, Harper, those are your favorites. Marcelo Ozuna plus 750, kind of crazy. I actually looked at him at 120-1 a couple weeks into the season. I wanted to make a case for it, but I kept saying to myself, like, well, he's still Marcelo Ozuna. He's a designated hitter. He's got the whole domestic violence thing. Like, I think that's going to preclude him from winning a voting award personally. I'm just trying to get into the mind of a baseball voter. And I do think that will be held against him if he is still, relatively competitive at the end of the season. And then it's just sort of a matter of fact, like Ozuna, Otani and Harper, you likely going to have division winners between Otani and Harper over Ozuna. So I just can't see Ozuna winning even at 750 now. I'm not kicking myself over not taking 120, but I do think I'm good at identifying the talent and the numbers. I was surprised to see William Contreras. He was like 10-1 for a while. I thought that number was kind of crazy. I don't know. I don't think a lot of these guys are really serious contenders that I see, say, between the 20 and 100 range, like Ketel Marte, Matt Olson, Ellie, Christian Yelich. And I guess maybe I'd circle around Christian Yelich one more time because he is a former MVP winner and he's on a first place team. But like Alex Baum, Jerks and Profar, like those aren't guys we're seriously considering. I don't know. What do you think? I really don't see anything outside of, say, the first five guys that I'm very interested in here.
I'm looking at the board with an open mind. I just can't get anything. Like, I agree with what you said about Ozuna. Unless he wins it clear cut and he's the best player, he's going to have a hard time winning it. It's hard to see past Otani and Harper. Now, crazy things happen. Harper a few years ago was like 30-1 in August and won it. So maybe there's an opportunity coming. I even thought, hey, it's so wide open, maybe a pitcher could win. But like Wheeler, who's the top pitcher listed, got absolutely hammered against Baltimore. He's not really a realistic factor. So I don't have a great answer. I think the chalk makes sense. None of these guys down the board I really want to jump in on.
Fernando Tatis is honestly the only guy between 10-1 and 20-1 that really fits the profile of a MVP to me. Honestly, like Ellie, don't think he's there yet. Year two, hard to see him making that jump. Matt Olson, like he's not going to beat Freddie Freeman. He's not going to you know, again, I'm not excited. I didn't even mention Freddie Freeman, but like, you know, he's a great player, but it's just not super exciting, especially with Ohtani on the team. I this is kind of one of those things where I really do, you know, I want somebody else to tell me what their secret play is and let me in on the secret here, because I don't see much. You know, Trey Turner, Corbin Carroll, all nothing.
Nope. Carroll's had a terrible year. Carroll, I don't think, is a realistic candidate. It's tough. It's probably one of those guys at the top.
No, I'm saying these were guys that like were candidates. Trey Turner, Corbin Carroll, O'Neill Cruz at the beginning of the year. Like, you know, those are just guys that are now also Rands.
Anything in either Cy Young league interest you at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, Cy Young, I do this every show now. I say, well, I don't, I mean, that's what do I care? Tom, Tango, Cy Young, Tracker. Sorry, I'm typing it into Google. Like I keep telling everybody, I don't love talking about the Cy Young on shows, because if somebody asks me, well, who's winning the Cy Young, I just say, well, what does Tom Tango think? Because he's usually right. And he has Ranger Suarez in first place in the NL. He's actually got Corbin Burns in first place in the AL. Luis Hill in second place. Seth Lugo, Tanner Houck. I don't know how to say his last name. Tarik Skubal is, what, fifth? One, two, three, four, five, yeah. And he's got Suarez, Imanaga, Glasnow, Wheeler fourth, Sale fifth in the NL. Market has Skubal first, Burns second, and Suarez first, Wheeler second. I have money on Glasnow and Burns from before the season. Haven't really been compelled to add to anybody else. I didn't bet Imanaga at all. I missed the train. For Rookie of the Year and Cy Young there. Otherwise, you know, really, I'm fine holding Glasnow. I'm fine holding Corbin Burns. I think Skubal's a great pitcher, but I think Corbin Burns is going to win this award if he stays healthy.
How about Rookie of the Year? Heel, obviously, in the American League, is a big favorite now. -160, Mason Miller's 3-1. Then National League Rookie of the Year, we got a bunch of pitchers, interesting race. Imanaga's even money. Skeens is +125. And you get Jackson Merrill, Ortiz. Take it whatever direction you want to go. Is there a bet to be made in either Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know in what world Luis Hill's a -160 favorite, you know, less than halfway through the season when he's projected to throw like 3.7 ball the rest of the year. His innings projection is still, I want to say, like 130, 140 innings. Like, we're not looking at Rookie of the Year style innings or strikeout numbers. And it's not to take away anything from what he's done. He's going to likely be on the AL All-Star team, deserves it. But, you know, we've seen several instances in recent memory of rookie pitchers being on the All-Star team and not winning the Rookie of the Year. So, it wouldn't surprise me if he kind of comes back to earth, but I expected him to come back to earth in his last start, and he pitched pretty well. So he keeps kind of proving me wrong. The other kind of names up near the top, Mason Miller, like, yeah, I think maybe he might have had too much early hype, and his negative FIP, you know, was very impressive, or whatever it is now is still very impressive. But hard to see an Oakland A's relief pitcher winning the Rookie of the Year with, you know, them winning 60-something games. Wyler Abreu has kind of been a random Red Sox prospect rookie. I have no idea where he came from. Wyatt Langford is kind of last man standing. Kind of crazy. He was the favorite before he even took an MLB at bat in spring training. He's 25-1 now. I would probably keep my eye on him this week, see what he does coming back, how he's been playing. If he keeps it up, I think he might be worth something, because, you know, it's a guy who was a clear favorite before the season, drifted out, was a little injured, maybe, you know, rushed his career a tiny bit, but he's a future stud, so wouldn't surprise me to see him have a good second half of the year. But beyond that, like, you know, I was real high on Jason Dominguez. It looks like he's not going to be up, you know, soon enough to make an impact in the Rookie of the Year race, unfortunately. now that he's on the injured list. So kind of hard to see anybody farther down here, you know, on the 50 to 1, the 100s, 200s. Jackson Holliday also on the AAA injured list. So it looks like no luck there. But yeah, so if you're asking me today, I think my my money would have to be on Wyatt Langford at 25 to 1. I think that's where my money would be at today.
Have you started betting any football yet?
No, haven't really looked at football. Kind of getting ready for the summer stretch of baseball. It's still got a lot of baseball to go on. Like, the nice thing is these markets aren't like done, you know. There's still so much baseball season left, I think, especially with the pitchers taking the lead. I think Skeens is another guy. When you look at his projections, he's going to pitch 100-something innings on low end of 100, you know, slightly maybe over 100 MLB innings this year. That's just historically not enough to win Rookie of the Year. So I really do think there's value on some of these other guys much farther down the list. Jackson Merrill, guy who's kind of played well for his, you know, the whole season. He's been up since day one playing center field in San Diego. There's going to be some position players that'll get some love as the season goes on. Mason Wynn, Joey Ortiz, who is the guy the Brewers acquired for Corbin Carroll. He couldn't make Baltimore. He couldn't make the O's. He might win Rookie of the Year in Milwaukee. It's, you know, it's interesting. I think this NL Rookie of the Year race is the one with a lot of movement to come, because I really don't think the pitchers at the top are going to hold on. And maybe Imanaga does. It's possible I just missed the boat on Imanaga completely. But I don't know. History says pitchers have an uphill battle to lock down this award.
You've had some unfortunate golf beats in, what was it, women's golf, right? Can you tell the people about those?
It was the men's golf. It was a mixed event, the Scandinavian mixed. Soderberg had an 8-shot lead going into the final round, and could not hold on to an 8-shot lead. I think he double bogeyed 18 to lose outright. That was 2 weeks ago, and then this last weekend I had Grace Kim in the women's golf. And she had a 5-shot lead going into the final round, which the largest lead of the season on the LPGA Tour, which I kind of knew right then when they said that, man, I was going to be in trouble on Sunday. But she started her fourth round, her final round, with bogey, bogey. By the time I woke up, I think a 5-shot lead was a 1-shot lead. And she did not play, you know, confidently and in control or the rest of the day or whatever. From everything I watched, it was tough. She was not having a great day, and she ended up making a playoff and going to a 3-hole playoff and losing, unfortunately. But yeah, that wasn't fun. You know, 2 weekends in a row of losing big favorites entering the final round is never a fun thing, but that's golf. You know, it makes the wins that much more rewarding when you know how many second places you've almost had.
What numbers did you have them at also?
I think 18 on Soderberg and bunch alive on Kim at 20. She was 200-1 before the first round, but a lot of my money was on her live during the first and second round. Both were pretty big bets though, so you know, not ideal.
So do you handicap this yourself, or you just take a look at the leaderboard and go from there? Like, I wouldn't even know who to look at, but this is something you're familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, I have a great strategy usually called bet the same people every week until they win. But I usually, you know, I have golfers that I pay more attention to than others. I do follow the world of golf and see what's going on. But no, I mean, my handicapping is not necessarily the most in depth for a lot of this stuff. It's mainly I bet the same golfers over and over. But yeah, I mean, I keep track of stuff that's going on. It's just not the, you know, like I don't go and do golf shows and talk about golf because, you know, I don't claim to be an excellent or sophisticated golf better. I just claim to enjoy it and occasionally make money doing it.
Anyone you're looking at this week, or it's too early?
Yeah, I haven't really done much this week. I know there's a women's major. So that means Rose Zhang will be back in the field. I'm sure I'll have money on her. Otherwise, kind of over the ladies I've been betting on lately. They've been letting me down. Other than that, I know we got a signature event, we got a live event, and I think there's a senior event. So I'll probably take a look, but no, I'm content not really betting much this week after the last 2 weeks of golf's almost win. So I'll probably take it easy this week, at least until the tournament start, and I can see what's up with the live markets.
All right, Jason. Well, this is always fun. It's been a while, so I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we'll do this again soon. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Spreadpedia. That's really about it. I'll be on there talking about baseball all summer.
All right, Jason, we'll do this again soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was fun.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Jason Weingarten. We will be back Friday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.